Second quarter earnings season kicks off this week.
Company performance might not actually match some of the euphoric conditions that we're seeing in the stock market.
And we report on the fractured family behind the company that makes OxyContin.
Just to give you an indication of the acrimony between the two sides, one tried to punch the other in a meeting and missed and hit someone else.
Plus, Boeing's troubled 737 MAX could now stay grounded until 2020. This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we get into our main story of the morning, a look at the family behind Purdue Pharma, which makes the painkiller OxyContin. Here's what you missed. Boeing's 737 MAX planes are unlikely to be ready to carry passengers again until 2020. That's according to government and industry officials who cite the time it will take to fix flight control software and complete other steps. However, the situation remains fluid with no firm timeline established. Boeing hasn't yet satisfied regulators with answers to outstanding safety questions. And engineers spent yesterday examining power equipment to try and figure out the cause of a huge outage that plunged a large part of Manhattan into darkness on Saturday. New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo called for a full investigation.
You just can't have a power outage of this magnitude in this city. It is too dangerous. The potential for public safety risk and chaos is too high. We just can't have a system that does it. It's that simple.
The power utility that controls the grid, Con Edison, said it would take days to figure out the cause of the blackout. And China's economy grew at its slowest pace since 1992. That's according to official figures released this morning. Trade tensions and sluggish business investment were blamed for the slowdown in growth. We say that the figures show that Beijing's strategy to stimulate the economy by cutting 2 trillion yuan, that's about $291 billion, in taxes and fees is falling short. Now, our main story this morning. You might have heard of the Sackler family, or at least seen their name on academic buildings and art galleries across the U.S. Now, we're reporting that the family, already fractious, is fracturing as thousands of lawsuits against the family's company, Purdue Pharma, pile up. Those lawsuits all have to do with one thing, OxyContin. That's the blockbuster painkiller made by Purdue Pharma that's been at the heart of the opioid crisis. Charlie Turner has been speaking to our reporter, Jared Hopkins, to find out more.
Jared, the Sackler family that owns Purdue Pharma, the maker of the prescription painkiller OxyContin, the Sacklers strike me as a family worthy of a made-for-TV miniseries. I guess the main thing that is occupying the Sacklers presently is how to deal with the thousands of lawsuits. They can't agree on that, I'm sure.
So family dynamics, our understanding, are playing a role in that. They settled one case from the state of Oklahoma for $270 million a few months ago. But leading up to that, there was disagreement on the strategy of that. There's also been disagreement in how to respond to media requests regarding emails from Richard Sackler, who was the president of the company for a little bit. A number of his emails have come out in this litigation in which he has been critical of people with addiction issues.
It seems like the only thing that they can agree on is that they're not responsible for the opioid crisis. But as you write, the Sackler family has long been fractious.
Yes. Purdue Pharma is controlled by two branches of the Sackler family, one from Mortimer Sackler and then his brother, Raymond Sackler, who co-founded it and started it nearly three decades ago. For years, the two sides argued in private in during board meetings and company meetings over big matters like corporate strategy and small matters like agenda items on their meetings. And often these were between the two brothers and then years later between the heirs of the two brothers.
I know they've argued over everything, seemingly everything, but what are the origins of the strain between family members? I mean, did something singular precipitate this?
So the actual reason for the strain is a little murky, but our reporting shows that Mortimer was opposed or did not support Raymond's son, Richard, becoming president of Purdue Pharma in the late 1990s. He held that post for about 4 years. So that is possibly one of it. But the two brothers, when they were alive, they both since passed away, they sat on opposite sides in board meetings. They didn't communicate to each other for many years and only talked through intermediaries. And this was well known within the company amongst employees, was these two sort of sides that existed.
All these conflicts have really strained the family's reputation as philanthropists.
Yeah, so a number of months ago, the increased scrutiny on the family, driven in part by the number of lawsuits that were building up, that attention and those lawsuits have led to a number of museums, a number of institutions suspending donations from Sackler family members. And this has really been kind of a shift, because for decades, the Sacklers have been affiliated with Columbia University, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and then a host of other entities, dozens around the world, really.
And, you know, it's not just two main factions that we're talking about, Mortimer and Raymond. There's also a third faction.
Yeah. So Arthur Sackler was the older brother and also became very wealthy. The three brothers did start the predecessor to today's Purdue Pharma together, but he passed away in 1987. He's in the advertising, the medical advertising, the Advertising Hall of Fame. He's considered a pioneer in pharmaceutical advertising. And his heirs and his descendants have been frustrated with a lot of the scrutiny and this litigation that's gone on, because they obviously have the same last name, Sackler. So late last year, the son of Arthur, Arthur Jr., was in the headquarters of Purdue and got into a heated argument with Richard Sackler, the son of Raymond, who used to help lead the company, and accused him of tarnishing the family's name and singled him out. So it shows you that yes, there are two factions of the Sackler family that control Purdue Pharma, but there is this other faction too that is kind of peripherally here on the sidelines, so to speak, but obviously has their own opinions, so to speak.
Is this the incident where one tried to punch the other and missed, hitting a company lawyer, or is that something else?
No, that's something from years ago, where the two Sackler brothers who started the company, just to give you an indication of the acrimony between the two sides, was that one tried to punch the other in a meeting and missed and hit someone else instead.
You can find Jared's article and our ongoing coverage of the Sackler family and Purdue Pharma up on WSJ.com. On to markets. This week kicks off second quarter earnings season, with bank earnings starting things off later this week. And this earnings season, well, it could be a big test for the stock market. Yes, that's right. Even though a dovish Fed has helped push indices towards new record highs, companies are warning that this quarter their results might be weaker than initially expected. Our markets reporter Steve Russolillo explains just what's going on.
Yeah, there are definitely some concerns that company performance might not actually match some of the euphoric conditions that we're seeing in the stock market. So there's two main reasons why companies have been a bit pessimistic about their earnings. And one has been slowing economic growth, not just in the U.S., but around the world. And that can play a big part in companies' earnings, revenue, margins, all of these major important indicators. And then the second, of course, is the trade dispute between the U.S. and China, and the billions of dollars in tariffs that have been put in place. This also is taking a toll on company results. So earnings have actually not been as great as they were, let's say, last year, when they were actually really, really strong. And so there is a concern that bad earnings could, of course, be a bad sign for the stock market. But there's a lot of focus right now on what the Fed is going to do. And if the Fed is going to indeed cut interest rates later this month, that could be a strong supportive indicator for the stock market and could help boost stocks even higher. So a poor earnings season is perhaps upon us, but I think it might also be something that is currently priced into market conditions right now.
And now the SCED. Here's what to look forward to later today. Expect continued fallout from a series of tweets President Trump sent over the weekend. He told a group of four freshman female Democratic House members that they should, quote, go back and, quote, fix the broken and crime-infested place from which they came. Democrats condemned the tweets as racist. And Huawei is planning extensive layoffs in the U.S. It comes after the Chinese telecom firm was blacklisted by U.S. authorities earlier this year. According to people familiar with the matter, the layoffs could number in the hundreds and are expected to affect workers at Huawei's research and development subsidiary. Huawei declined to comment. Finally, how old were you when you met your best friend? If you answered in your 20s, then you're not alone. According to a large international study commissioned by Snap, that's the company behind Snapchat, the average age that people say they met their best friend was 21. It skewed slightly lower for millennials, who said they met their BFF at around 17, compared to baby boomers, who said lightning struck at around 29 or 30. The reason? Well, according to the study's authors, your 20s are when you're off on your own for the first time, having important new experiences, and perhaps most important of all, you have much more free time to hang out. Does that ring true to you? Let us know. Tweet us or email us at whatsnews, all one word, at WSJ.com. That's What's News from the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.